We all know the big sad headline for today. That is the death or massacre of at least 22 uniformed soldiers of India between Chhattisgarh police and CRPF, including at least 8 of CRPF's Cobra Commandos, as they are called. These are special battalions trained for these areas called Commando Battalions for Resolute Action. So, in short, everybody likes an acronym. So, Cobra Battalions, well-trained soldiers, lots of weapons have been lost also, looks like one LMG as well. So, first of all, credit where it's due. So, this morning when I woke up, I checked my email. One of the emails was from one of our viewers, one of our very regular viewers and readers called Vishwas Ghimre, who lives in the Northeast, and he, in fact, in Manipur, and he sent me a mail saying that, why don't you do a Kattak letter on the Naxal movement, communist movement, or extreme communist movement, violent communist movement in India? So that is what has caused today's Kattak letter to happen. So thank you very much, Vishwas Ghimre. And if you mail me your address, I will send you a little book with a note on it, with a, basically a thank you note on it. Now, don't ask me to tell you the entire history of the communist movement in India. One, that will take too long. Second, I am not so well informed on that. So I will read up and say things to you, but you can hear that from better informed people, as we might do in some time. But I'll talk about it briefly. But first of all, let me take you to where this happened. Look at this map, the map of this part of India, and see where these districts are located. This is the southern end of Chhattisgarh. Chhattisgarh is a very large state, but a very thinly populated state. At least large parts of it are very thinly populated. That is the large Bastar region, huge, humongous region. Very few villages, hardly any urban centers, hardly any semi-urban centers also. So genuinely rural, genuinely remote, in the middle of nowhere. No wonder, no surprise that in Ramayana, this is where Dandakaranya is located, where Lord Ram, Sita and Lakshman had gone for their exile, for their vanvas. Now, it is in this area, once again, if you look at this map, the southern part of Chhattisgarh, first of all, you see how we are located. So, the larger Bastar region, now this is a bunch of districts, come look at Kanker. After Kanker, see Bastar district, the entire region is Bastar region, Bastar district, then Narayanpur, then Bijapur, Dantewada, Sukma, and Kondagaon. Kondagaon is on one side. Now, these are the districts which are most Naxalite affected. Why? Because the terrain is very suitable, and also the socio-economic conditions are very suitable, because most of the population, rural population, is tribal. They've suffered from exploitation and misgovernance, and actually lack of governance for decades and decades and decades. In fact, for centuries and centuries and centuries. So this was an area that was ungoverned, more or less, which had anarchy of its own kinds, with lots of local chota warlords and mafioso and tribal chiefs and other kinds of stuff. And people then, finally, Naxal leaders or ideologically motivated young people from universities in big cities, particularly in what is now Telangana, what used to be Andhra. A lot of them moved in, because remember, India's violent or extreme or quote-unquote revolutionary communist movement was born in what is now Telangana in 1948. Not just that this was an impulse, but they actually declared into about 3,000 villages that they were setting up communes in the proper communist style. And they also said that they were wedded to the Mao kind of revolution, Mao or Bolshevik revolution, which is continuing a war involving the entire population until you could change the entire system in India. That is going back to 1948. So it didn't work there very much, but many of these leaders, very idealistic, very driven, very motivated, they found refuge in the jungles of Dandakaranya. That is how Dandakaranya became the hotbed of Naxal activity. Although Naxalism came much later, Naxalism came almost 30 years after this first sort of impulse that we saw in Telangana region of Andhra Pradesh. Naxalism came up in 1967 approximately, that I'll talk about a bit later. So what has happened in this particular case? You see these two districts at the southern end of Chhattisgarh, two very sparsely populated districts and thickly forested, that is Bijapur and Sukma. So once again, I will run through the districts and see them on the map on my screen. There is Kanker, there is Bastar, there is Narayanpur, then there is Bijapur, Dantewada in the middle, Sukma, again extreme south, then Kondagaon. So these are the districts which are sensitive, and it's between Sukma and Bijapur that this incident took place. Now it looks like a group of, or a large force of nearly 1,000 policemen and paramilitary policemen were going into these villages or into these jungles looking for a big target. The big target was a man called Hidma, who is today the most prominent commander of the underground or of the underground armed units of the Maoists. That is the first battalion of what is called as PLGAs, People's Liberation Group Army. So that is also the best trained and the best equipped. So they were searching for him. It looks like that some NTRO or at some place, some signal intelligence had picked up some indications that Hidma was somewhere there. It seems now that as they moved, either the Naxals already knew that they were coming in, and this maybe it was even a trap. We don't know. Some stories have come out saying that Naxals laid a trap, because as these soldiers walked in, these are very large body of soldiers, as they walked in, they found village after village empty. And that usually is the first indication that a trap is being set for you, that you are being expected. It's also possible at the same time that when so many soldiers move, 1,000 plus, it's like a little moving city, because all your provisions, all your arrangement for cooking, eating, you stop somewhere, toilets, all that happens, and word spreads because somebody sees and somebody can then take the message forward. So we don't know if it was a trap or it was an operation too big and too slow moving to remain a secret. If you ask me, I would not rule out the possibility of this being a trap, because Maoists are very smart people. Their leaders are also well educated, and they learn from their mistakes. In fact, there are stories, if you read writings of, say, someone like Rahul Pandita, who's been covering that region for a long time, and whose book, Hello Bastar, I rely upon to understand a lot of the basics of the Chhattisgarh Naxal problem. Then he will also tell you that Naxals actually learn from their mistakes, they make videos, and they learn a lot more from their mistakes than the police forces do, because police forces commanders keep changing, and usually when a big incident like this happens, the first instinct, the basic instinct, is to cover the backsides of all the top officers. If you saw the statement by the CRP DG, the first statement was there was no intelligence, operational or tactical failure. If that is the case, how did so many people die? Then you say, no, we also killed so many of their people. How do we know? We saw somebody taking bodies in a trolley. If you were there, you could watch them taking bodies in a trolley, and you were such a large force, why didn't you pursue? It might convince somebody's parents, but it doesn't convince other ordinary citizens, because something major has gone wrong. And also, if this was such an evenly hard-fought battle, how come so many weapons have been lost? Because Maoists live by captured weapons. In this case, they've captured a lot of weapons. They've captured a lot of bulletproof vests. In fact, Rahul Gandhi tweeted that all soldiers in this time and age should have bulletproof vests. The fact is, many of these people, in fact, most of these people had bulletproof vests. Two things happen. One, these areas in this weather in particular is very hot and very humid. Humidity runs to upwards of 90%. It's very difficult even to keep a shirt on, there to keep a bulletproof vest on. Again, you can keep body armor on if you are going into a short, sharp operation. You can take it for that long. But if you are on a hike for hours and hours or days, nobody keeps body armor on always. In any case, a lot of the bulletproof vests were also taken away by the Naxalites, and lots of boots from these soldiers were taken away, because the common tactics of the Naxals is they put their firepower in front. Once they surround you, once they wound some people, then others come with axes or with knives or with whatever to kill the wounded and to take away whatever they can. That is the pattern. I am not saying exactly that is what happened here. To that extent, a Naxal ambush is no different from what a Naga ambush used to be in late 50s, early 60s. But before that, which became so famous or infamous across the world as an Afghan ambush. Large bodies of British army were cut down in Afghanistan like that. In fact, that actually inspired Kipling, Rudyard Kipling, to write one of his more, moving passages of poetry. Because what happens when you are wounded in Afghanistan? It said something like, when you are wounded and left to die on Afghan plains, and women come to cut up what remains, you pick up your rifle and shoot out your brains and go to your God like a soldier. So once you're caught in an ambush and you are wounded and your comrades have run away or they are hiding, then you are exposed to an extreme kind of brutality. And that is how ambushes in these situations take place, and that's how you lose all this equipment. So if you lose all this equipment, then you cannot say we fought very well, this was an even fight. That is cover your backside. So I'm sorry, but the pattern in the Naxal areas has been this. I will give you some incidents of large casualties, but after all the large scale casualties, you find the first effort is to protect the big officers. In fact, people can be unlucky, brilliant people can also be unlucky, but the fact is that the same officer who was DIG, I'm told, led the operation in Tarmetla or Chintalnar also, as it's sometimes called, the 2010 April 6 operation, in which 76 Indian soldiers, mostly CRP, had died, the biggest ever massacre. It is the second largest number of casualties Indian armed forces of any kind have suffered in any internal battle, any internal warfare since 1947. The highest was the night of the first night of Operation Blue Star. But this is the second highest. The same DIG now, I believe, is now back in Chhattisgarh as IG or maybe DG in a senior position doing the same thing. So unless you can fix accountability for what has gone wrong, these things will keep on happening. Now I'll give you some recent incidents. So March 2017, 12 CRPF men were killed. April 2017, 26 CRPF men were killed in a place called Chinta Gufa in South Bastar. March 21, 2020, 17 were killed. These 17 included 5 CRP and 12 District Reserve Group, the local policemen. And this year itself, March 23, 5 DRG soldiers were again killed in Narayanpur district in the same area that I mentioned. So these incidents are now going on. Now, BJP government likes to say that since they came in, incidents have gone down. But remember when Narendra Modi was campaigning in 2014 elections, one of the things he said was, Tirupati se Pashupati tak Maoist raj kar rahe hain. That means from Andhra, Tirupati, that's how he rhymed it, to Pashupati, that is Kathmandu, because that's when Maoists were coming to power and becoming stronger and stronger in Nepal. So he said that this is the Maoist arc that runs through the heart of India into Nepal, and that has happened because we had a weak government. Let me come, we'll fix it. It's been 7 years. If you see all these incidents, these have happened in recent times. It doesn't tell you that any big difference has been made to the situation. In 2015, Rajnath Singh as Home Minister had said, that Naxal problem will be over in 2 to 3 years. See, it's not over, it's still going on like this, and they still, every time they get away with an ambush like that, with an attack like that, one, they go away with a bunch of weapons and a lot of ammunition, but more importantly, they go away with their morale boosted. So that idea of the state dominating the place and reinstating or restoring the faith in the legal constitutional rule of law, that becomes a failure again, that gets a setback again, and that is what has happened right now. Now, 2010, we told you, Chintalnar cum Tarmetla, that was the highest toll so far. But if you look at the larger picture, in the 20 years leading up to 2017, about 12,000 people had been killed in the Naxal violence or Naxal attacks. Of these 12,000 people, 2,700 were police or paramilitary forces people. So once again, I will say something that I say often, that more Indian soldiers, they may be in khaki, not in olive green, but more Indian uniformed Indians die every year fighting the Naxals than die fighting terrorists in Kashmir. I'm not talking about firing on the line of control with Pakistan, that's a different issue. But somehow, we don't get so focused on what's happening in the heart of India, which is also the resource heart of India. Because Government of India has just passed this new MDMR Act to now bring in new focus on mining. It is the mining heartland of India, which is controlled by these Maoists. So one, they extort money from mining companies. Two, they extort money from government officials. And three, if they are challenged, then they are able to pull off ambushes like this, which tells also the local people that you can't count these people out. Ultimately, forces will come and go away, sometimes with a bloody nose, sometimes with a success, but the Maoists will remain. So Government of India, the authority of the Constitution of the State of India, is not being enhanced in these areas, although there have been substantial progress lately in terms of building roads into these areas. In fact, even this tension, it is possible, came in because these areas are being made more accessible with the construction of another crucial road, because that is what the Maoists don't want. Now you might ask me, who are the leaders of the Maoists? So the fact is that what used to be the Central Committee, that suffered many setbacks. In fact, many of those in UPA's times, particularly when Chidambaram was the Home Minister, but also subsequently. So, some key leaders, there was Azad, whose name actually is Cherukuri Rajkumar. You will find many of these people, leaders, or at least the original leaders, were from Andhra/Telangana, and they were educated people. So Azad, Cherukuri Rajkumar, he was killed in an obviously fake encounter. In fact, any time the UPA government raised questions about the Ishrat Jahan encounter, I would say what is sauce for goose is sauce for gander. You also hold somebody accountable for the Azad encounter, which was a cold-blooded fake encounter, although he was a top Naxalite, without a doubt. Similarly, somebody called Kishanji. Now Kishanji also was from Andhra. He was killed. He was the boss of Lalgarh area in West Bengal. He was also killed again in a fake encounter. Then Kobart Gandhi, who was again a senior leader, top leader, ideologue, he was caught, and many others were caught. Now the top leadership of the Naxals has weakened a great deal. In fact, even that poet, the famous poet of Andhra or Telangana now, Gadar, who used to be with them, who used to sing revolutionary poetry for them, he's also now left them and he's joined the mainstream. In fact, during the last Telangana elections, I also happened to have a conversation with him on camera. But enough fighting people remain, particularly under Hidima and his PLGA 1st Battalion. Now, I will give you a very quick rundown of how the Naxalites in India came into being. 1967 is the first time that there were stirrings of trouble in this tiny village. Now, it's not such a tiny village, called Naxalbadi in West Bengal. It's in the northern side of West Bengal, not very far from Siliguri. In fact, some trains going from Siliguri, I remember taking a train to Viratnagar or some place close to Viratnagar, it passed through Naxalbadi some time back. So, Naxalbadi is where an issue arose between local tribals and local landlords. So some tribals were subjected to excesses and one was killed by local landlords, and tribals got together under a tribal leader called Jangal Sandhal, and they retaliated. And when they got success, others got encouraged, and this business of attacking the feudal lords or landlords or the feudal classes, zamindars, started. Now, before that, many changes had come about in the Communist Party in India. Communist Party of India, CPI, was set up in 1920. Initially, it was set up and it had great support from the Soviets, and it also sympathized with the Soviets. And that's the reason that Second World War, the communists in India were not in favor of Quit India movement, because they knew they wanted India to be part of, continue to be part of the British effort to fight Hitler, because that was also part of the alliance with Stalin of what was called as the Great Patriotic War. Then it went through many changes, which I'd rather not go into detail with, but we know that late 40s, a lot of Indian communists did not accept the Indian democratic system and the constitution. That was the time that some of your famous artists like Balraj Sahni, Majrur Sultanpuri were also jailed, even by the Nehru government. Then some group or a larger group joined the mainstream, decided to contest elections, whereas the violent movement remained in the Telangana region for quite some time. This larger body which joined the national mainstream and contested elections was CPI. That CPI also came in conflict within itself after the 1962 war, because CPI felt sympathetic or loyal both to Soviet Union and to China, so to Mao as well as to successors of Stalin. And now they were torn between Indian patriotism and these ideological loyalties. So there was a split at that point. Those of my generation would remember that All India Radio used to refer to them as Dakshinpanthi, Vampanthi, or as Moscowvadi, Pekingvadi, as Beijing was then called. So the party split in 1964. CPI remained pro-Moscow. CPM, in a way, was pro-Beijing, but not quite openly. So CPM itself went through a split, because CPM then joined the mainstream in 1967. It joined the ruling coalition in Bengal. So a group led by a man called, leader called Charu Majumdar, quite charismatic, he broke away and he set up the revolutionary wing of Indian left, which became Naxalites. Naxalites, why? Because they carried out their first actions in Naxalbadi area. So that's how the name Naxalite came in. Now I believe BJP is very strong there, but that is one of the ironies of Indian politics. It looks like BJP might even win there. Now, once Charu Majumdar, Kanu Sanyal and Jangal Santhal, these three leaders, started this armed movement, they came up with the idea of, that was called as the annihilation line, which means kill those who you have disagreements with or who are a threat to the people, which means landlords, businessmen, civil servants, policemen. So there was free for all, and that is where a lot of the killings came into urban areas of Bengal as well, and it spread to urban areas in other cities in a limited way. Later we saw some echoes of it in Punjab, Andhra, even Maharashtra at some point. In fact, it's in Gadchiroli district of Maharashtra that Naxals are still strong, and that is bordering, again, if you see the map, bordering the same Naxal belt around Chhattisgarh. So that caused a revulsion. A lot of the people in Bengal didn't like these daily killings. Somebody, some businessman is going somewhere, somebody will come and stab him from behind. And a lot of educated young people got inspired by this ideology. Now, Mrs. Gandhi was in power. She would not take kindly to it. So she worked on a scheme to crush it. General Sahib Manekshaw, then Lieutenant General, was Eastern Army Commander in Kolkata, in Fort William. So she worked out a plan with him and with Home Secretary of India, Govind Narayan. It was a covert plan. Covert means it was to be kept off the record. For the army and the local police and the paramilitary forces to set up special units to carry out massive encounter killings and to eradicate Naxalism. This started in July of 1971. This was called Operation Steeplechase. Now, those of you who know, who follow athletics, would know what steeplechase is. It's a race where the sprinters go over hurdles, which are physical hurdles, but also water hurdles. So you have very shallow ditches with water inside them. So you jump from one to the other, and it's a complicated race. So this operation was called Operation Steeplechase. It was planned under Lieutenant General Sam Manekshaw's watch. It was run when Manekshaw was Chief of Army Staff. And in fact, General Jacob writes in one of his articles and also in one of his books that when he asked for written instructions for carrying out these operations, Manekshaw said, no, there were going to be no written instructions. In fact, he was told there should be no publicity of anything. So that is when this movement in Bengal was put down. But since then, there must be some oomph, some sex appeal to this ideology that this keeps coming up. But in the course of time, a lot of this very ideological and very idealistic and very courageous, I would say, young people figured out that they needed a place to hide. They also need a large territory and people who they could make a kind of empire of their own. So that is the place they chose, and that place generally is in Dandakaranya forest in Chhattisgarh, Odisha, Maharashtra, Jharkhand. These are the states which are the most affected by Naxalism, a little bit in Bihar also, and in fact one district of UP as well, but very little now.